Welcome to this week's edition of Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. Each week, I'll be discussing different issues and different ideas with entrepreneurs from Malta and overseas to help you change or start your own business. So welcome to this week's program with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest is Mark Azzopardi from Working Town.
Hello.
I like that name, Working Town. That's
thank
cool.
you. Yeah,
quite a nice name. So you were just telling me off air that the last time you were in this studio was 20 years ago.
Yes, actually, probably even longer than that. It was in the mid 90s. I was studying architecture at the time.
Okay.
And I was the president of SARCES, I don't know if it's still called that, the Society of Architecture and Civil Engineering Students. And they had interviewed us because we were organizing an exhibition of architectural students' drawings.
Very nice.
It was the first one, which I think they still do annually.
Okay.
So that was a while back. I never became an architect, though. I switched halfway and studied engineering, and that's... And I graduated eventually as an engineer.
But you're not an engineer today. So you, this sort of entrepreneurial streak of yours, you keep changing direction.
Yeah, well, I no longer work as an engineer. Mm-hmm. It's been 4 years since I left my last engineering job, which I miss, I have to admit, because I used to love working...
The drawings and stuff, or the...
Well, I worked mostly in operations, in manufacturing, in operations, and I loved it because it was a good balance between the technical side and the human resources side. I always loved working with people. And I always found that, people problems, so to speak, were more challenging but more interesting
than
machine problems, if you like.
Oh,
so,
no.
So I always, it's easier to fix a machine than a relationship, I think.
Absolutely, you know? So, that's why it's fixing machines.
But it was, I used to love it, you know, but in the end, working especially in manufacturing was really 24/7. I worked in operations. I was an operations manager in one of the, you know, most prominent local
manufacturing companies.
And it was really a 24/7 job. I mean, we had machines going on all the time.
So you have to be available if something
you have to
major.
Be available. I loved it. I mean, if I didn't have a family with kids, I would sleep at the factory without any problem. But obviously it takes a toll on how much time you can spend with your family. And that was my daughters. I have two daughters who are still young at the time. They still are young today. They're 9 and 11 now. This is 4 years ago.
Mm.
And I took a decision that I didn't want to, you know, wake up one day with my daughters taller than I am and hardly ever
seeing them.
So I used to drag them to the factory occasionally on weekends, and they would help me, you know, sort out some rejects. So I'd give them some, you know, they used to love it. Well, my younger daughter still mentions it sometimes.
How cute.
Well, now you're going back to the factory. But this is why I decided to leave employment and start my own business.
So
because it's...
What did you decide to do? Did you have an idea, or did you just leave and think, oh, something will come to me?
Well, I left suddenly and not, because when I decided to leave, it was, I think, May. And I had a contract until September, which I honored. So I left without any... plans of what to do next, but I had some time to think about it.
Okay.
Before I worked at this particular company, I was working in Germany, and it was supposed to be a 3-month project which lasted 12 months, so I was in Germany without my wife and without my family, because, you know, for 3 months my wife works full time as well.
Yes, yeah.
So there was no point in moving the whole family. Well, if we knew that I would have been there for a year, maybe we'd have, done things differently. But when I did come back and was working at the factory, you know, my wife passed a comment at a point that it was better when I was in Germany, that they saw me more when I was in Germany, literally, because I would come back every 3 or 4 weeks and spend 2 or 3 days, and they came to see me a couple of times. So that for me was the sign that
stop.
That's, you know, and the fact I spoke to the general manager of the company lit the day after and told him that I gave in my notice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started thinking about, okay, so what's next?
Okay.
And I had some time to think about it. I was lucky as well that the company were very proactive in finding a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a bit, you know, we found someone who replaced, so we had a very good handover. The person who replaced me hardly needed one because he hit the ground running, and I felt, in fact, a little bit redundant for a couple of months there because it was he took over so well. And, you know, probably the company was better off in the end with him instead of me.
It gave you an opportunity and then one. So
yes, but I by the end of, by the time I did leave, I had the idea of setting up a company which focused on human resources
mm-hmm.
with a friend of mine, a partner. We set this company up. It was a company called Azure Rock Partners, which is still the company I run today, but now we brand as Working Town, as you mentioned before. And the idea was to, again, when we started out, we were not so clear on the exact objectives of the company, but I always enjoyed working with people, like I mentioned before.
Yes.
So, and this is why I enjoyed the factory so much, because it was a good mix between the engineering and technical side and the human resources side. So, you know, motivating people and understanding, you know, what helps them perform better and you know, realizing that when people work, it's not just about their performance and, you know, and their package, but they need you know, to feel respected. They need to feel that what they're doing is making a difference, having value. So I always enjoy that aspect of work. So I thought at the time that human resources would be a good area for me to work on, and that's what we did. We set up Azure Rock Partners with a partner at the time, and we started working mainly. Our original goal was recruitment.
Okay,
so we got the recruitment license.
For the engineering industry, or did you
not,
go across the board?
Not only engineering industry. In fact, not mainly. We focused mainly on the financial services industry. Because before I worked with this particular factory, I was working in financial services with a family office, a US-based family office. So I worked with a number of financial services companies. Mm-hmm. Until today, I work in governance roles in a number of companies which are regulated by the MFSA. And I think, you know, financial services is quite a thriving sector here. And we were focusing mainly on that. There's a lot
staffing
of...
Staffing it.
On staffing it. Uh-huh. So that was the original goal. We focused a lot on recruitment. But I realized also very quickly that it was not a sector that I particularly enjoyed. Recruitment is not an easy business.
Mm-hmm.
Companies have a big demand for people, and it's not easy to match people with companies when it's, especially when companies are, I don't know if desperate is the right word, but if companies are really
strapped for people.
Strapped
and
for people.
A limited pool.
I think it's a situation which tends to lead to a lot of staffing, recruiting errors. And
That's constant. That's not something that's fresh. Because that's still happening today, that there's not enough people, or not enough of the right people, and you know, we're importing people for every type of job.
Yes,
you know,
I mean, I like I said, this wasn't a party. It was a very cutthroat sector. There are a lot of companies. There are some very good companies. Just I'm not. I don't want to. I mean, we still have a recruitment license. We still occasionally place people, but we focus on what I call candidate-driven recruitment. So
okay.
I don't help companies find people, but I help people find companies. If that makes sense.
So somebody comes to you with a good CV, frustrated.
Yes, they want to move on
to Malta or whatever.
For whatever reason, and we use my network in whatever financial services or engineering,
uh-huh.
and I proactively introduce them to companies,
mm-hmm.
which is I think it's I enjoy it more that way, because you sit down with a person, you know, learn more about what they aspire to,
mm-hmm.
and it's better to make a meaningful placement when you understand what the candidate is really looking for. What the company is looking for is also important, obviously.
Yes.
But I think, you know, happy candidate, happy company.
And if you find the right type of candidate rather than fitting them into a slot.
Exactly.
You've
so
you've got someone who can
everything
grow.
Counts, you know, attitude, culture. Yeah. It's important to make a good match when it comes to, you know, like I said, temperament, etc. So we place these days it's a very small part of our business. We place maybe two or three people a year.
Mm-hmm.
So but I like to believe that they're good placements. They're people who are still mostly with the companies where we've placed them. They're happy, the company's happy, and it's something that we do very, I mean, if a company approaches me to look for people, we just don't do it. We set up an online jobs portal called workingtown.com, which is a new portal, and we direct companies towards that.
So that's a regular job site where people can list their jobs, candidates can go
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And in fact, till the end of the year, because the website is still in beta testing mode, because we've recently been joined by an IT partner, so we have inside in-house IT capabilities. We are re-beta testing the site again, if that makes sense, and we're allowing companies and recruiters to list vacancies for free, okay. at least until the end of the year, until our new IT gains sort of control over the coding and makes some updates that they want to make, etc. So the website is up and running. And it's up and running for free. So.
And that's again in the finance industry, or that's something you just across the board?
It's a generalist website. It's a generalist website. I mean, we tend to attract, because of my network, more financial services roles, but it's a generalist website. So any company with a vacancy can log on to workingtown.com and register and list the vacancies for free.
And you have no other involvement in that? That's more of a product that sort of sits there and would almost run itself with this IT company in the background?
Yes, it does eventually, but obviously there's a lot of promotional work that needs to be done. So mostly the product itself works, so to speak, by itself. I mean, don't tell the IT people that, because obviously there's a lot of work behind making it work the way it does. But in terms of the marketing and making the website well known, there's a lot of work and a lot of investment that goes into it.
Okay.
And even allowing companies to list for free is part of our efforts to make the website used and known.
Yeah.
So.
But that's come about sort of almost full circle from when you started with the recruitment business.
Exactly. I mean, it was really, the website was an idea because I just wanted to move away from vacancy-driven recruitment. So it was a way to help companies, because when you make a connection via the website, the company, for now, as I said, the listing vacancies are free, but eventually they'll pay a small fee to list their vacancies. But then if they do find someone from the website that is suitable, that they meet and recruit, there's no further fee to pay.
So there's none of those agency fees that
Can
be quite steep, shall we say.
Yes, and I mean, we charge them too when we make a placement, which is candidate-driven, but, you know, using the website, there's no need
to do that.
So it was really, the idea of the website was to give companies that came to us looking for people another route, which wouldn't... recruitment is a difficult business, and as I said, there are a number of good companies in Malta that take it very seriously and do a good job, and they have, you know, a lot of resources, a lot of consultants. Yeah. We don't have that.
So how do you differentiate yourself then? Like I say, it's quite a busy market. It's quite a busy area already. Everyone's always looking for staff.
Well, like I said, we focus only on candidate-driven when it comes to active recruitment. So I would meet people who are looking for new opportunities for whatever reason, and try to think of a company within our network that where we think they would add value, and where we think they would enjoy their time there, and. I don't think many companies do that. I think we are, you know, most recruiters are vacancy driven. So they would only, or most of their activity would be related to a client who has asked to fill in a vacancy. So they know there's a vacancy, and they know that there's a company ready to pay them a commission. And that's fair enough. That's the way recruiters work, and that's the way we used to work. When you work candidate driven, It's different because you approach a company proactively. You don't know if there's a vacancy.
But you've just, and it's normally a high-end candidate, I'm guessing.
Normally there'll be high-end candidates. There'll be candidates who are, you know, either looking for new opportunities mm-hmm. or tired of their current job for whatever reason. And it's always interesting to hear the stories of why people want to leave mm-hmm. and why they... And you hear lots of reasons. And, you know, one interesting thing, and I think most recruiters will tell you this, money is rarely the reason
people leave. Yeah.
Most people will leave. I think the top reason people leave is the relationship with their direct boss. Hmm. If that goes sour, you know, your life will be miserable and you just want out.
Yeah.
And then there are other reasons, you know, but mostly it's related to how people feel about how they are viewed within a company. Do they feel respected? Do they feel valued? Mm-hmm. Do they feel as if their work is making a difference? Do they feel that their input is, being heard? People want to be valued. Yeah. So that's really what I think is when people don't feel that way, they want to leave.
Mm. And people want to. Companies should start paying attention to. This sort of thing.
To this sort of thing and other aspects. I mean, flexibility, for example, is something which a lot of people... I mean, it's the reason why I left employment mm-hmm. myself. I was in a job that I loved, that I enjoyed. The people were great. I'm still in contact with the company and had a chat with my former boss just a couple of weeks ago. Really a super company, but there are some jobs that you can't. I mean, when you work in a factory, you physically have to be there.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
no remote working.
There's no remote working, but you know, there's a lot of potential for, there are a lot of other companies that can easily tap into remote working, but they have still a little bit of a, I attended an FHRD seminar a few months ago on remote working. It's really interesting to understand how companies can make use of remote working to help even retention.
Yes.
You know, and one of the things that struck me about this seminar was, I can't remember the name of the person who delivered the presentation. She had left her own job. She hadn't left her job. She had been asked by... her favorite band, imagine mm-hmm. of all things, to manage one of their tours, and she, you know, it was opportunity of a lifetime and all that. She went to her boss, and her boss told her, "Listen, as long as you get your job done, I don't care where you are."
Yeah.
And she went on tour with the band, and so she'd work with the band in the evening, mm-hmm. and during the day she'd have her laptop, I imagine, or whatever.
Yeah, doing whatever.
And she became interested in this, and she's written books in the meantime on remote working, and we were lucky enough to see this. I wish I could remember her name, though. But one of the impressive things that she said was, because one of the reasons why companies don't really focus on remote working is mm-hmm. is trust, right? I mean, if I see you sitting at your desk, I feel comfortable that you're doing your job, right?
Even though you could be online shopping, sitting on Facebook, whatever else.
Exactly.
Heck, yeah.
But if you're at home, who knows what you're up to?
But strangely, when you work from home, because I work from home myself, obviously not when I'm in the studio, but everything else I do from home, and I get a lot of work done before anybody else would have even got dressed. You know, I get most of my work done then. And I guess I miss company, I miss banter at the coffee machine, I miss hanging out with people for lunch, but my job is done way, you still do the hours, but you're finished early, and yes, you can have the washing machine on, yes, you can, that parcel can be delivered, you don't have to hassle then to try and squeeze in picking up the, you know, online shopping, or whatever, so it does work both ways. There's a, like you say, flexible, I think, is the key. Mm-hmm. It's not just home working, it's not just office working, but...
Yes, flexibility is very important for workers these days. And like you said, I mean, I also work from home, and it takes a certain discipline, which I don't always have, and it takes some getting used to. I mean, the factory used to be quite regimental in terms of time. You need to be there at 7 in the morning, all of a sudden you're at home, and no one's really going to say anything if you... you know.
I feel guilty though. I can't.
But still,
can't
that's the internal discipline that you have, you know, that you need to get work done. But one of the impressive things that we learned at the seminar was that amongst remote workers, burnout is much more of an issue than absenteeism.
Ah.
So people who work from home have more issues with overworking and working too hard and burnout than actually having issues with their boss because they aren't getting stuff done.
I think it's the guilt factor because, like I said, I don't sit there in the afternoon and watch a movie, you know, and wait for the phone to ring or whatever.
I would say discipline more than guilt. You know, you're a responsible person. You know, you have a job to get done and you get it done. Right. And there are many advantages that companies can have, assuming that a job does lend itself to, you know, be, like I said, at the factory, I couldn't work from home. You know, you need to be there with the machine. But if there are jobs that do lend themselves to being done from home or remotely, you have, you know, the advantage that I would assume that it would help retention. You know, people like the idea that they can. Now, sometimes you can't just let everyone do it. You know, you need to have certain thresholds that people need to reach or whatever. But also, you know, you need to rent out less office space, for example.
There are benefits.
You know,
both
that's
sides,
also
yes.
a cost reduction, you know, benefit from. But I think every company will know its own operations, will know its own procedures, and will know how to address this or begin to allow this kind of arrangement. But like I said, I mean, the point is that flexibility is something which is very important for workers today, and it's really something that I hear a lot mentioned. You know, I have a lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm. Why should I leave, you know, even for a better pay, for example? Or
so do you think that's why more and more people are starting their own businesses? And
It could be the case. I mean, it's definitely why I, you know, well into my 40s decided to start a business. It wouldn't be, I don't think I ever had, you know, the entrepreneurship bug, so to speak, when I was younger. I never imagined myself starting my own business. Okay. This was the catalyst, if you like, for, you know, why I wanted to spend more time with my family, be more flexible. And I thought, you know, if I you know, maybe starting my own business was a good opportunity to do that.
So what else do you do apart from, you've got the recruitment site and the reverse placement?
Yeah, the candidate driven.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, candidate driven is something we do very opportunistically. Mm. So it's really a small part of the business. If I do meet someone interesting, I see if we can, you know, help him or her, you know, approach one of the companies within our network. Mm. And the online jobs portal is, of course, something we focus on. But the main thing that we probably focus on these days is corporate events.
Okay.
So we organize a number of events. They're entirely for now self-organized. So we organize them ourselves. We choose a topic which we think is of interest to industry.
Mm-hmm. So remote working could be one.
Remote working could be one, but right now we are working on three events.
Okay.
One is on blockchain and artificial intelligence, which we're organizing at Villa Bologna on the 10th and 11th of October. Mm-hmm. And it's entitled Blockchain and AI, Where Are They Taking Us? And the idea of this, of course, blockchain and AI are big topics.
Yes,
you know, Malta is trying to be
blockchain island.
You know, blockchain island. We're trying to be proactive when it comes to attracting businesses in these sectors. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interest around these sectors, and there's also a lack of knowledge. A lot of people hear about blockchain, but they're not quite sure what it is.
It's still a little bit of an unknown
in terms of what's the fuss about.
And AI, actually, because AI
as well. Yes, AI as well. AI is probably affecting our lives in many ways that we don't even realize already. So the idea of this conference is to demystify that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the event will also be a free lecture on the basics of blockchain.
Okay.
Delivered by Professor Sula Luca from the University of Nicosia. She's one of the pioneers when it comes to education on blockchain.
Okay.
So it will be really an honor to have it.
Sort of idiot's guide to blockchain.
Yes, the ABC of blockchain, you know, a sort of, you know, you're trying to teach a seven-year-old about the basic concepts of these things.
Seven-year-old probably gets it. It's like how
it will probably be easier. I mean, I see, you know, I was talking to, having a conversation about, you know, these, you know, the millennials and these different generations. Yes. And now I actually found out that my daughters, who are 9 and 11, are what will be called Generation Alpha. Mm. First time I heard it last week. And this is the first generation that actually grew up completely digital.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, you know, a middle-aged man, and I sort of learned to use the internet when I was in my early, email when I was in my early 20s. Yes, so it's not something I grew up with. But my daughters actually are immersed in digital everywhere they look. You know, they only know that. So it's you are right that probably a 7-year-old will pick it up quicker than I would.
Uh-huh.
So.
But so maybe they don't need to go to this conference. What are the other conferences you're working on? You said there were three.
Yeah, we're working on one in London in March of 2020. This will be our first conference outside of Malta, because I really believe that it's important to internationalize.
Definitely.
As a business. And this will be on managing fraud risk and cybersecurity. We're calling it CyberCon London 2020.
Okay.
We're very excited about it, a little bit nervous as well, to be honest.
So who's that targeting?
That is targeting businesses that are interested in learning more about how they can deal with cybersecurity issues, but also it's aimed at networking between professionals in the sector. It's going to be a little bit different, this conference, because we are going to upscale high senior management people through an engaging experience.
Right.
So this is going to be, there's going to be an experience throughout the event, which will hopefully help senior managers understand why it really is important to handle cybersecurity issues within their company.
And just very quickly, the last exhibition that you're working on, who's that targeted at?
That will be on dealing with mental health at the workplace.
Fantastic.
That will be in June or July. We don't have a date yet. But it's also important for us to have a CSR element in our events. And I think mental health is an issue that is not spoken about enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have some really amazing speakers.
And that's going to be in Malta?
That will be in Malta.
Been fantastic talking to you. Mark Azapardi from Working Town. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chambers.
Thank you for listening to this week's Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. I'd also like to thank Carmela Gregg and Redent Abdillah for the production of this show. The show is aired every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and repeated every Friday at 7:30 p.m.